Oh, hey, I think you had a couple more minutes, unless my clock is wrong. But that's okay. I'll go ahead and take it. Hi. Happy Monday. I was just listening to, the room was crashing until I got here. Well, let's see if the room stays up while I'm here. We'll find out, I guess. If not, it's not. Okay. So you were just using up a bit of time, I guess, because whatever was supposed to happen couldn't happen because of the room going up and down. Is that what you're saying? So anyway, we are here for the 7 steps to awakening. And we're going to be starting with 141. Oh, you were just waiting for me. Okay. we're going to be starting with quote 141. I don't really think I have a lot to tell. Like I said, I was just listening to Dove's teaching from this morning about shame. And I spent a lot of time this morning in contemplation. And that's it. That's it for now. So why don't we just go ahead and start with a few moments of silence, and then we'll just jump right into the 7 steps. How's that sound? Okay, let's go. Amen. All right, so as I mentioned, we're here to look at the 7 steps to awakening along with my personal journal on the 7 steps. And we're starting with number 141. So what I'm going to do in the room is give you a link to number 141. If you're a... Oops, I forgot to log in as admin. It's telling me I'm not authorized to send a URL. Hold on one moment. I'm just going to pop out and pop right back in as admin so that I can share links with you. Okay? One moment. All right. Now I have link ability. So let's try that again. Here is a link to 141. If you are listening on the radio and you want to read along with the journal, then you can go to RDA7. That's the digit 7, not spelled out. RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. We are on step 1, which you will find on the menu bar. And then you just find the number series that will let you find your way to 141, which is where we are starting. And as always, I am going to read from the book, The 7 Steps to Awakening. Every now and then somebody will ask me what this book is, but you can find that out for yourself if you just go to Amazon.com and search for The 7 Steps to Awakening. You'll find it there. It's nothing but a book of quotes, but it does set forth in the directions and organized way of using the book in order to further your own awakening. And that's the process I am going through and loving it. So right now I'm in step 1 of the 7 steps as far as this sharing and pal talk goes. And in particular, the quotes are coming from another book. They're re-quoted here in the 7 steps, but the original source is called The Supreme Yoga. And quote number 141, which comes from The Supreme Yoga, says, "There is no salvation without the total renunciation of all notions or ideas or mental conditioning. Again, there is no salvation without the total renunciation of all notions or ideas or mental conditioning. All right, we can look at the journal now and see what I wrote after contemplating that quote from the Supreme Yoga. I cannot reserve for myself the ideas I am partial to and have the open, free experience of omnipresent self. I must release all limiting ideas to have the experience of unlimited. When an idea crosses the mind, look at it and ask, is this idea limited? If so, let it go. It is an obstacle to truth. This is maybe a little more insightful than it might appear at first glance. Any of us who still believe to any degree that we are the personality, body, mind, have ideas that we are not only partial to, but that we think we are right about. And if someone should state a different opinion, then we think we are right and they are wrong. Now, if you just look at that for just a moment, you have an idea that you really feel you are right about, and someone else states a different opinion, and you believe you are right and they are wrong. There's division there. Do you see? There's division there. It doesn't matter what the idea is. I did listen to Lori's teaching as well in the room, that was in the room last night, and at some point towards the end, I don't know if she goes by Lori or Lori Ann, whichever. And somewhere near the end, somebody said something about she couldn't claim to be awakened. I don't remember what their reasoning was. But they said that she couldn't claim to be awakened. She had been talking about her awakening experience. And this person said, you cannot claim to be awakened. Because, and they had a reason. And I'm sure that person felt right. Or that would not have been stated, right? But if you heard the sharing, or if you listen to the recording later, you'll hear that Lori did not come back in with an opposite opinion. She did not come back in with an "I am awakened, and here's why." Dot dot dot. She said, "Well, you know, those are just words. You know, those are just words. If you want to, you can say I'm 3/4 awake." You know, she didn't share an opposite opinion, something that she was right about, even though she had been sharing up until that point about her awakening experience. Now, when faced with what seemed to be a differing opinion, she did not defend herself. So, when we take the side of any opinion and we say, I'm right and you're wrong, there's division. And it only makes sense that if there's division, there cannot be omnipresence. Because omnipresence has no division in it. So whenever I reserve for myself any idea that I am partial to, reserve for myself means I want to continue to say I'm right about this, then I deny myself the experience of omnipresent self. Because it's impossible to have division and omnipresence simultaneously. So any idea, then, that can be disagreed with by anyone is a limiting idea. Any idea that can be disagreed with by anyone is a limiting idea. So as soon as I say something and somebody states a disagreement about what I've said, that's the perfect time to follow Lori or Lori Ann's example and just say, something that shows that, you know, truly in my heart, I am not, I do not have a firm opinion here or a firm partiality. Because as soon as I attach to a firm opinion or a firm partiality, I also attach to division. And again, it doesn't matter what the subject is. That's the funny part, is because some of us, we can hear this to a point, but then there's some subject, some pet subject, an idea I'm partial to, some pet subject where I know, but in this case, I really am right, and that person is wrong. That's where we drew the line. So I cannot reserve for myself the ideas I am partial to and have the open, free experience of omnipresent self. I must release all limiting ideas to have the experience of unlimited. When an idea crosses the mind, look at it and ask, is this idea limited? Another way to say that is, could anyone disagree with this? If so, let it go. It is an obstacle to truth. Isn't that beautiful? So tell you what, let's scroll down. And on the left side, you'll see where there's a little number 142. You can click on that to go to our next journal entry. And I will also provide a link in the room. I'll take a drink of water, and then I'll read from the 7 Steps to Awakening. Seven Steps to Awakening, number 142. Though appearing to be intelligent, thought is unable to comprehend anything really. Though appearing to be intelligent, thought is unable to comprehend anything really. All right, let's look at the journal. Number 142. Real knowing has nothing to do with thinking. Real knowing is the present experience of all-pervasive peace. When this experience is realized, it is recognized as true knowledge, also known as home. Now, I don't know about you guys and girls, gals, but when I started this path and I would read about knowledge with a capital K, I still thought it meant knowing something like thoughts. You know, whether it was knowing everything there is to know about the world, everything Einstein knew, everything everybody's ever known, whether it meant knowing how the world is made, all of the metaphysics. I imagined that knowing meant having some type of intellectual knowledge, probably superhuman or beyond human intellectual knowledge. That's what I thought knowing meant, knowledge with a capital K. But notice how knowledge is defined here. Real knowing is the present experience of all-pervasive peace. And it says that when this experience is realized, it is recognized as true knowledge, also known as home. Right? Home. The present experience of all-pervasive peace. Notice there doesn't have to be any intellectual knowing at all. We don't have to be Einstein-like, or we don't have to know everything there is to know about metaphysics, or have some superhuman or beyond human intellectual understanding. It's just truly the present experience of all-pervasive peace. And so if you accept that as the definition of knowledge, then you also can clearly understand the first sentence, which says, real knowing has nothing to do with thinking. That just becomes a fact, right? You don't need thinking for the present experience of all-pervasive peace. In fact, thinking is actually the obstacle to the present experience of all-pervasive peace. So real knowing has nothing to do with thinking. Real knowing is the present experience of all-pervasive peace. When this experience is realized, it is recognized as true knowledge, also known as home, with a capital H. So if you are in the journal now, you can scroll down and on the left, click on number 143. I will also post this link in the room, because I have linkability. And I'm going back to the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. Again, the quotes are coming from another book, actually, called The Supreme Yoga. And I will read number 143. Craving is the root of all sorrow. And the only intelligent way is to renounce all cravings completely and not to indulge them. Even as fire burns all the more fiercely when fed with fuel, thoughts multiply by thinking. Thoughts cease only by the extinction of thinking. So I will read that one more time. It's a little bit long. Craving is the root of all sorrow, and the only intelligent way is to renounce all cravings completely and not to indulge them. Even as fire burns all the more fiercely when fed with fuel, thoughts multiply by thinking. Thoughts cease only by the extinction of thinking. All right, let's read number 143 from the journal. A desire is an enticing thought, one we are easily drawn into. However, all thinking feeds thinking. Therefore, desire, no matter how pleasing or enticing it may seem, is a path into more thinking and away from the open emptiness that is self, or the all-pervasive peace at his home, right? Notice when thinking is engaged by desire and let the desire go. This lets go of the path of thinking. Now, during this contemplation of number 143 from the Supreme Yoga, this was the first time that I saw this clearly. I mean, certainly I've heard about the ideas of letting desire go. In fact, NTI Hebrews, that is a main objective of that entire book in the Holy Spirit's interpretation of the New Testament. It's teaching us to let desire go. It says that's how we let dreams go, is by letting desire go. So I wasn't new to that idea. The twist that was new for me in this contemplation and helpful for me was the definition of desire as an enticing thought, one we are easily drawn into. Of course, I understand the connection between letting go of thinking in order to realize self or in order to realize all-pervasive peace. I understand that connection. I don't think I had necessarily drawn the connection before between a desire and an increase in thinking. So it doesn't matter what I desire. It doesn't matter if I do desire, I think Lori was her name, right? Lori or Lori Ann. I think she talked about four distractions. I don't know if I can remember all of them right now, but I remember the first one was like power, or the Course might call it grandiosity, you know, trying to get attention, trying to get people to think highly of me, trying to get people to think that I am, you know, a great teacher, very clear, clearer than the average bear, you know, whatever. If I get caught up in that desire, that distraction, as she called it, then what comes of that is thinking. thinking about how am I going to get you to see me a certain way. Maybe I'm thinking about how I can get more people to invite me to travel more. Or maybe I'm thinking about how I can get my name out there more. Or maybe I'm thinking about how I can get a better, more attractive website or make people more aware of my website. Or, you know, there's going to be thinking. If I am caught up in that desire, it's an enticing thought. It's one I'm easily drawn into, and it's going to lead to thinking. And all thinking feeds thinking. So that means that ultimately what desire is a path into thinking, which is away from the open emptiness that is self, or the all-pervasive present peace. So this kind of gave me another way of looking at why I want to let go of desires. I began to see desires not as desires in the way I saw them before, something I want. I began to see desires, well, I think Lori described it perfectly last night, as distraction. Desires are something that pull me into thinking. And anything that pulls me into thinking is distraction. Right? So a desire is an enticing thought, one we are easily drawn into. However, all thinking feeds thinking. Therefore, desire, no matter how pleasing or enticing it may seem, is a path into more thinking and away from the open emptiness that is self. Notice when thinking is engaged by desire and let the desire go. This lets go of the path of thinking, right? So if I am excited about the idea of power, grandiosity, having people think I'm great. and that's leading to a path of thinking, how am I going to get my name out there? How am I going to get people to notice me? How do I get my website improved? Blah, blah, blah. Then when I notice that, I want to let go of the root of all of that thinking. And the root was the desire for grandiosity in the first place, right? The desire for power in the first place. If I let go of the desire, then as you can see, all of the thinking goes with it, right? Once you let go of the root, the entire plant goes. So it's actually quite simple and logical. All right, so you can scroll down and on the left, click on number 144. And for the room, here's a link. I am going to read from The Seven Steps to Awakening first, the book, number 144. Never again fall into the mire of conceptualization, which is the cause of all sorrow. Never again fall into the mire of conceptualization, which is the cause of all sorrow. All right, we can go to number 144 in the journal. And it says, when the mind thinks, it builds complex concepts by taking this perception, adding this interpretation, mixing it with that belief, creating this problem, initiating these ideas, employing analysis and judgment, etc., and ongoing. It is a path away from the still and present heart to the busyness and complexity of mind. Worry, stress, and sorrow accompany mind complexity. Stay simple. Stay in untangled peace. Be happy. And for me, the easiest way to take that advice is by staying in the moment and not thinking of the future. And maybe, you know, maybe at one time that wasn't easy for me. I think that, you know, if we go back to when the ego was full bloom here, if I had taken a test, and I might have even taken a test, it seems like this personality was a future-oriented personality. So always thinking about the future, always planning the future, and in fact, even known as being very, very good at that, very good at setting future objectives and actually meeting them, so that other people would come to me and want to learn that skill. You know, how do you determine these objectives? How do you determine your future objectives? And then, you know, how do you achieve them? How do you keep doing that? Well, so I was very good at complexity, actually. In fact, I used to say I could very easily and very quickly look at a problem from all different angles and come up with a good solution. This is how I prided myself. But what I wasn't aware of at that time, I became aware of it later, what I wasn't aware of at that time was the underlying stress that was always there. There was always this fear that it was going to be the next problem that I wouldn't be able to solve. You know, even though I had a lot of success under my belt, the fear was always that it was the next one that was going to blow up in my face and show that I was really just going by the seat of my pants and had been very, very lucky or something like that, you know. So even though I seemed to be very experienced and very good at complex thinking, it did have stress that accompanied it. Even being very skilled, I was not able to avoid stress. Now, somehow over these years of being on this spiritual path and through willingness and through grace and through practice, now I find it actually somewhat simple just to stay in the present. I think probably the tool that helped me to make the transition was the idea of a movie. You know, I don't really enjoy a movie the same if I know what's going to happen. I enjoy a movie more when I don't know what's going to happen. And I started applying that, you know, just kind of as a transition to my life. I started realizing that my future-oriented self was always trying to control what was going to happen. And again, she was pretty good at it, but actually it would be more fun, just like a movie, not to know. And so by using that transition thought that I wanted to have the fun of not knowing, the fun of seeing how it was going to unfold, just like a movie, I started training myself to let go of that future orientation. And then at some point it just became more natural and more easy just to stay here now. And here now, this is the simple. This is the untangled piece. This is the way to be happy. So when the mind thinks, it builds complex concepts by taking this perception, you know, whatever you perceive, and adding this interpretation, whatever story mind has about it, mixing it with that belief, this little piece of the past thrown in, creating this problem, initiating these ideas, employing analysis and judgment, etc., and ongoing. It is a path away from the still and present heart to the busyness and complexity of mind. Worry, stress, and sorrow accompany mind complexity. Stay simple, stay in untangled peace, and be happy, which, as I said, for me is just staying present now. All right, let's scroll down and we'll click on number 145, which is on the left, and I will also post the link in the room. And I'm going to take a drink of water. Okay, I'm going to read number 145 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. It says, "Do not be led astray by the long-winded, empty statements of the wicked, self-appointed teachers who have no direct experience." My guess is the word wicked here is used, believe it or not, without judgment, coming from the Supreme Yoga. But it's, I think it's being used to point out that, you know, listening to the wrong voice will lead you in the wrong direction. So it's being used for emphasis. Like I sometimes use the words damn shit or hell for emphasis. Not a part of my normal vocabulary, but if I want somebody to listen, I might use those words. Do not be led astray by the long-winded, empty statements of the wicked, self-appointed teachers who have no direct experience. All right, let's look at 145 in the journal. To deny that there are false teachings is foolishness. False teachings are born of the desire to be special, and the desire to be special is attracted to them. The desire to be special can be sneaky and carefully costumed. Jesus called it wolves in sheep's clothing. Watch carefully within and discern with absolute subtlety. What is specialness? What is complete humility? Follow the guidance of humility and leave specialness untouched. Do not fear. Nothing is lost on the path of humility. So I was talking to someone today, and we were talking about a particular religion she was raised around. And she was talking about how, as a young person, this was very difficult for her because the religion taught that you, and this is not unusual, many religions teach this, because the religion taught that you had to be one of them to go to heaven, that you could not get in heaven unless you were one of them. And her family was actually of a different religion, but the culture she was in was primarily dominated by this other religion. And so the teaching was really that she and her family were left out, and that if they wanted to be saved, they needed to convert. And, you know, this really just appealed to her unworthiness, and she suffered from this for a very long time until Holy Spirit gave her clarity regarding that thought. But, you know, we can look at a lot of teachings, and we can see that the teachings a lot of times are saying, you need to be like me, or you need to think like me, or you need to follow me in order to be saved. Your path has to be the same as mine. Your opinions have to be the same as mine. Your practice has to be the same as mine in order for you to be saved. And basically what this is saying is that whenever we can hear that theme in a teaching, we're listening to a false teaching. We're listening to someone who actually does not have an experience of, we could call it an experience of truth, an experience of knowing God in some way. Because anyone who has what I would call genuine experience also knows that genuine experience seems to come to each individual in a unique or individual way. Kind of reminds me of the line in A Course in Miracles, I believe it's in the workbook, that says something about this being a highly individualized curriculum. It doesn't just say individualized curriculum, it says highly individualized. everyone comes to seeing or realizing in a unique way. Everyone. So whenever any of us are sharing from our experience, at best, that's what we're doing, is we're sharing from our experience. And maybe there is something in my experience, in my way of awakening, that is helpful to you. But ultimately, what you need to follow is your way of awakening. In fact, you can't do anything else. So any teaching that says, I have the answer and you have to do it my way, is a false teaching, and it's not coming from experience. No one with experience would ever say that. These are the wolves in sheep's clothing. Humility is knowing that I do not know the answer for you. Heck, I don't even know the answer for me. And the reason this says, do not fear, nothing is lost on the path of humility, is because, of course, the ego mind, the thinking mind says, you've got to know what you're doing. You've got to know where you're going, or you're going to end up in the wrong place. But that's not true. By not knowing what you're doing, by not knowing where you're going, by not knowing the answer, you're completely open to present moment guidance, which does know. So to deny that there are false teachings is foolishness. It's foolish not to have discernment. There's no judgment of false teachings, that's true. You don't want to point at a person and say he's bad or she's bad because they teach that dot, dot, dot. That's not helpful. But if you're listening to your inner guidance that does know your way, it will tell you when not to listen to something. It will tell you what is not helpful. Just like it will tell you what to listen to and what is helpful. To deny that there are false teachings is foolishness. False teachings are born of the desire to be special, and the desire to be special is attractive to them. The desire to be special can be sneaky and carefully costumed. Jesus called it wolves in sheep's clothing. Watch carefully within, and discern with absolute subtlety what is specialness, what is complete humility. Follow the guidance of humility and leave specialness untouched. Do not fear, nothing is lost on the path of humility. And you can click on number 146. I will also post the link. And then I need to leave my chair for just a moment because Jamie wants to go outside. I will be right back. All right, so I'm going to read from this. Oh, I'm noticing Betsy here is quoting something called The Steps to Knowledge, which I don't know, but here's the quote. I will allow uncertainty to exist today. Isn't that a lovely quote? I will allow uncertainty to exist today, from The Steps to Knowledge. I don't know if that's a book or a section in A Course in Miracles, I'm not certain, but I love the statement. I will allow uncertainty to exist today. Okay, now I'm going to read number 146 from The Seven Steps to Awakening. When consciousness abandons the perception of the three modes of time, when it is freed from the bondage of objectivity or conceptualization. It rests in utter tranquility. I might have looked up the three modes of time, maybe, when I originally read this. I don't have a recollection now as to what it is, the three modes of time. When consciousness abandons the perception of the three modes of time, when it is freed from the bondage of objectivity or conceptualization, it rests in utter tranquility. Okay, let's look and see what's in the RDA Seven Steps Journal at number 146. Oh, look at this. Maybe I didn't look it up. I don't know. Because look what I wrote. Does spiritual teaching need to be understood before it could be abandoned? Is ritual required in order to know the guidance of one's heart? Is there someone or something to follow? Or is there only this now? What am I listening to? Based on what I wrote, I think this is probably the path that my mind took. Probably the path that my mind took when I read number 146 in the Seven Steps to Awakening, as I saw this three modes of time. And I realized I didn't know what it was. And there was probably the thought to look it up. And I might have even looked it up. I don't remember. But then I probably realized that it was from some teaching that was not a part of my culture, was not a part of my past. And I realized I don't need to take on and understand this teaching, because then I'll just have one more thing, one more idea, one more concept to turn around and let go of. It's okay that I don't know what the three modes of time are. In fact, the heart of this quote is that when consciousness is freed from the bondage of objectivity or conceptualization, it rests in utter tranquility. So why would I read a quote about letting go of concepts and in the process try and understand a new concept? It seemed like I didn't have to do that. This was perfect. It's written in the book, The Supreme Yoga. I'm sure it's perfect for its culture. I'm sure those that are from that same culture, possibly Hindu, certainly Indian, those that are from that same culture know what the three modes of time are, and this is very, very helpful. But a Hindu does not need to learn Christianity in order to awaken, and a Christian does not need to learn Hinduism in order to awaken. We do not need to understand each other's symbols or previous teachings, no matter how helpful those teachings are. What we need to do is find that inner path. It came to me this morning that I do know I'm on my inner path. And the way that I know I am on my inner path is that I am carried by it. There is no actual seeking or searching like I don't know. I mean, like, what's another way of saying that? Because I'm not trying to say that I know everything. I have no idea what clarity or realizations or questions may come tomorrow, so in that way I don't know. But it's just that there's not this feeling of I have to find something that I don't have. Maybe that's the way of saying it. There's not this feeling of there's a path out there, or there's information out there, or there's something out there that I don't have and I'm still seeking to find it. That does not exist for me, even though there's still awakening happening. There's no seeking happening. It's more like instead of running around looking for something that I think I don't have, it's more like I'm a flower naturally blossoming, right? There's still an opening that is occurring. There's a perception of a change in the way I see or realize, just like a flower opening, but without the seeking. So there's nothing in me that needs to go out there and learn something I don't have. I don't need to understand something I don't understand. I know that my inner path is guiding me, and it delivers to me everything that I need right when it's perfect time for me to have that seeing or have that understanding. So does spiritual teaching need to be understood before it can be abandoned? Because any spiritual teaching that I understand, eventually I am going to have to abandon for my own inner path. You leave the intellectual for the intuitive. Does spiritual teaching need to be understood before it can be abandoned? Is ritual required in order to know the guidance of one's heart? Is there someone or something to follow? Or is there only this now? What am I listening to? And of course, what I am listening to is, again, what I'm calling right now my own inner path. Somebody posted something in Facebook the other day. I'm going to ruin it a little bit because I only read it once, and so certainly the quote is not memorized. It said, now I don't know this for a fact because I've never really studied Buddhism, but it said these were Buddha's last words. If anybody knows Buddha's last words perfectly and you want to type them in the room, go ahead. I don't mind reading what you type because I'm kind of winging it here. But what I saw in Facebook was something to the idea of Buddha's last words being, never listen to someone else over your own inner self or your own inner truth. And if those were indeed Buddha's last words, within his guidance was the same as this guidance that we're looking at now, that everyone has their own inner path. As A Course in Miracles calls it, a highly individualized curriculum. And although we may be guided to listen to teachings, or we may be guided to read from books, we may be guided to seek counseling, we're also guided in what we don't need to know, what we don't need to follow, what we don't need to listen to. The guidance is within. It's an inner path, always, always an inner path. That's what we want to be listening to. And we don't need to seek anything that isn't provided. Our spiritual path carries us. It's kind of like being on a sailboat. It does have the appearance of going somewhere, but it's carrying us. All right, let's scroll down, and on the left, click on number 147. I will also post this link in the room. And I'm going to read number 147 from The Seven Steps to Awakening. This is at the very bottom of page 37. Because you are not fully enlightened, your mind clings to the illusion of objective perception of concepts. Again, because you are not fully enlightened, your mind clings to the illusion of objective perception of concepts. So let's look at number 147 in the RDA Seven Steps journal. Here's what I wrote. Mind loves itself. As long as there is some remaining attachment to mind, attention will find itself drifting back into the play of mind. This is because attention is a function of mind and therefore attracted to itself. Upon noticing this drifting back into mind, acknowledge that attachment to mind still exists. Do not deny and pretend otherwise. In denial and pretending, attachment remains strong. Instead, look, acknowledge, and rest back in the heart. This simple process eventually pulls attention into the heart, because heart naturally has the strongest attraction. Let's see, there was something else that Lori Ann said last night that came to my mind while I was reading. It's already left, so why don't I start reading again, and then assuming it comes back, I'll stop then and share what had come to my mind. Mind loves itself. Oh, I remember already. That was the next sentence that reminded me. As long as there is some remaining attachment to mind, attention will find itself drifting back into the play of mind. Okay, so what she talked about last night, starting very early in her talk actually, was she talked about being what she called awake in the dream and awakening from the dream. She distinguished between those two experiences of hers. And she said being awake in the dream is not believing the self anymore. And I would add to that also not believing the world. Not believing the self. So a thought may cross my mind, so-and-so is annoying, but I know enough not to believe that thought, and therefore I never experience annoyance. But, you know, there's still a little bit of, there's still some attachment to the idea that I'm the self, too. I mean, I guess the way to say it is the self still seems to be. It's just I don't believe it. That's probably how I would say it. The self, the individual self, still seems to be. I just don't believe it. And she called that being awake in the dream. What she called awakening from the dream was when the self completely, the words she used were dissolved, when the self dissolved. So there was no self anymore, no self to believe or not believe. The self itself was non-existent. And then somewhere near the end of her talk, she asked the question, you know, basically like, where are you guys? Is there anyone here that's awake from the dream or awake in the dream, you know, meets one of those two prior definitions. If so, I'd love to know. And you know, of course, I wasn't even in the room when this happened. I was listening to a recording this morning. But when she asked that question, you know, I asked myself, how would I answer that? And the answer that came to me was partially awake in the dream. I wouldn't even say that I'm fully awake in the dream, and I certainly would not say that I'm awake from the dream. But I would say, based on those definitions that she gave, that I'm partially awake in the dream. Because a significant amount of time, there is not believing in the personality or the world, and therefore not reacting, not being upset, you know, being happy, all of that stuff that comes with not believing. But there are still times when I do seem to still get caught up. So I can't say that I'm fully awake in the dream. I can only say partially awake in the dream. And if we look at this particular quote back in the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, what he says is, because you are not fully enlightened, right? So he's talking to people, I guess, like me, who maybe are partially awake in the dream, but not fully awake in the dream and certainly not awake from the dream. And he says, because you are not fully enlightened, your mind clings to the illusion of objective perception of concepts. Now let's look back at the journal and what I wrote. Mind loves itself. As long as there is some remaining attachment to mind, which if I am only partially awake in the dream, there is some remaining attachment to mind, right? As long as there is some remaining attachment to mind, attention will find itself drifting back into the play of mind. This is because attention is a function of mind and therefore attracted to itself. Mind loves mind. So if there's any belief in mind at all, there's going to be times when I'm going to find myself thinking about some, you know, problem in the world, some story of the past, some possible situation of the future. That's what happens to those who are not fully enlightened. However, the second paragraph talks about what we can do about it, especially if we are partially awake in the dream. We certainly can do this. Upon noticing this drifting back into mind, acknowledge that attachment to mind still exists. Do not deny and pretend otherwise. There is a temptation in the world for those who are partially awake in the dream, to pretend they are fully awake. False enlightenment, it's called, or spiritual ego, it's called. And this is saying, do not fall for that temptation. If you are able to get caught up in the play of mind, daydreaming, problem solving at all, then you're not fully enlightened. So don't pretend like you are. Don't lie to yourself about that. Acknowledge that there is still some attachment to the mind. It says, in denial and pretending, attachment remains strong. But then instead, acknowledge, yep, not fully enlightened here, that's for sure. Because I was just thinking about such and such. I was totally off on that. But now I'm back. Right? Because I am partially enlightened or partially awake in the dream. So I'm back now. I know better than to keep believing that. And now I rest back into the heart. It's a practice. And it says, this simple process of remembering and coming back, remembering and coming back, eventually pulls attention into the heart or into the stillness, because heart naturally has the strongest attraction. So even though mind may love itself and mind is attracted to mind, the truth is heart has the strongest attraction. So through this simple practice, we are making ourselves available to be pulled fully into the heart, so that then we can be what might be called fully enlightened, whether that is defined as awake in the dream or awake from the dream, irrelevant at this point for me anyway. But that slipping away and forgetting no longer happens. All right, you can scroll down and click on number 148. We have 5 minutes left. I'm going to let Jamie in real quick, and then we'll move on. All right, number 148 at the top of page 38 in the Seven Steps to Awakening says, mind is like a cloud of ignorance. Dispel it by the repeated renunciation of all concepts and precepts. That's kind of, although his wording is a lot different, that's kind of what we just talked about, right? Continually remembering, letting go of what you were thinking about and returning to the heart. He calls it repeated renunciation of concepts and precepts, I guess. I don't know. Some word I don't use. Mind is like a cloud of ignorance. Dispel it by the repeated renunciation of concepts and percepts, or whatever that last word is. Let's look at 148 in the journal. The best answer for breaking attachment to mind is repeatedly recognizing the love, the comfort, the home of heart. Now you may notice the love and the devotion of these words. Last night I talked a little bit about how sometimes it seems that my teachings are misunderstood. You know, when I talk to other people and they tell me what I said, or they tell me why it's not working for them, and I listen, what I hear is that actually I was misheard. And it seems like the most common reason that I'm misheard is because of the filter through which I'm being heard. And that filter is often the filter of, I'm not good enough. Or you could also call it the filter of, I'm lacking. There's something I don't have. You know, I'm not whole. I'm not good enough. And so when they listen to the teaching through that filter, what they hear is, again, because that filter is color in it, they may hear something like, every time I go off thinking, what's really happening there is I'm not good enough, I don't practice enough, I'm bad, and in order to not be bad, I need to be good, and the way to be good is to stop this damn thinking. See, I use the word damn for emphasis. See how I do that? But the idea that's in there is kind of like the mechanics are understood. The mechanics are understood of when I go off into thinking and I notice that I need to let go of the thinking and return to the heart, return to stillness, return to my mantra, return to my lesson of the day, whatever. The mechanics are understood. It's the motive that is off. The motive is, I'm bad if I'm doing it this way. I'm not good enough if I'm doing it this way. In order to be good enough, in order to be, you know, good, spiritual, whatever, I need to do it this way. It's that motive that's off. And with the motive off, the mechanics actually aren't helpful. It's interesting because, as I said, I'm still awakening. That's my perception. I'm still awakening. There's a blossoming and opening that's happening here. But I don't have a perception of I'm not good enough. I don't have a perception of I'm lacking. I don't have a perception of there's something I'm not doing right. I don't have that. Therefore, I'm never teaching that. It does seem like, however, what's still coming from me, and therefore what I continue to follow, is what I would call practice. But it's a loving practice that's coming from the inner path that is carrying me. And it's not telling me that I'm not good enough or that I'm in the wrong place or I should be somewhere else. It's just guiding me in what to do now. It's a very present moment practice. And this is saying that the best answer for breaking attachment to mind is repeatedly recognizing the love, the comfort, the home of heart. Just remembering when I see my mind off thinking again, just remembering that what I love more is the heart, the stillness, the letting go of the thinking. And so it's choosing repeatedly over and over what I love more. Not because I'm bad, not because I'm lacking, but just because that's the way my inner path is carrying me now. You see? That's the way I'm sailing across this ocean right now, in this sailboat. And for now, I'm out of time. So we'll stop here at 148. We'll begin with 149 next Sunday night. I will be back on Friday with Lynn for A Course in Miracles. All right, you guys have a good day. Bye.